Welcome to Hidden Battles, Destigmatizing Mental Illness, where passionate advocates of mental health converge to illuminate unseen struggles faced by millions. Join Jeremy, Terrell, and Lorraine as they delve into candid conversations about stigmas, cultural risk, values, intersectionality, and mental health. Hear from mental health professionals and those diagnosed with a mental illness. Together, they put on the table the things people think about but are afraid to talk about. Get ready to embark on an insightful journey.
Listen weekly on Spotify, YouTube, Apple Podcast, and subscribe, like, and please share with family and friends that can benefit. See you on the journey.
Welcome back to the second episode of the year. Again, we have Tiffany Childress here from Linked to Literacy. We're going to continue our conversation from the last podcast. Tiffany, can you give us some anecdotal success stories maybe that you've seen that have just warmed you up? It could be volunteer experiences. It could be chill. You know, what have you seen?
All the above. Quite honestly, from a volunteer standpoint, one thing that we have not lacked is traction in the community. We're not utilizing them enough because, yeah. You have a small time frame, right? But we're thankful for our volunteers. Success story we've had too. One program I didn't talk about in the last podcast is we have empowerment packs, and that's providing brand new backpacks filled with 3 to 5 books ages 0 to 19 for children in the foster care system throughout the state.
Nice.
And so one of my favorite, testimonials came from a director that said, these kids, they actually want to share, but didn't have anything that they owned. Mm. And so what she witnessed is, a child lives in the year 3 of receiving this is like, hey, this book helped me. You can borrow it or you can have it.
Yeah.
And that's the power of, again, ownership and then really being able to read and then be able to help your peers.
So in the last podcast, we had talked about access to words and why would a 0-year-old child need a book?
One example is, it's not even for them, it's for the parents or the caretaker.
Sure.
Where it's a point of peace. What can I bring them? What can I draw their attention to? Mm-hmm. And so it's a good building block really to how to deal with stress, how to deal with those high emotions and where do you find a place of peace? And so, one of the co-founders, she's like, her two children, she's like, our happy place was just, surrounded by, me reading to them.
Yeah.
And she had, Kat Alsey is her name, she had the vision of creating lifelong learners, right? Mm-hmm. And so that's why that 0 age group up to I was intentional as a first-time parent where I was fortunate enough to have friends that love me and wanted to throw showers.
Yeah.
I had multiple. My sisters weren't thrilled about it. But instead of having cards, I asked if people could bring books.
So I built the
home library then. And then that's what we did when, Easton was a child. Like his first book is on the night, his favorite book is on the night you were born.
Oh.
Yeah. And then Nancy Tillman, she was it for us.
That's awesome.
And I still quote that all the time. But
awesome.
that's it.
Cool.
That's why you start then.
Yeah. That's one good thing I think about Lincoln is that we do have a high turnout for people volunteering.
Can I just mention, we talked about reading at 0, age 0, newborns. But I think reading, because we read to our children when they're in the stomach, during the pregnancy, they can absorb all of that. And Terrell can contest to that.
Yeah, reading the dictionary, multiplication, all that other good stuff, division, hoping that they grab some of that. I want to know where you're very passionate. Mm-hmm. What drives you? Where did all this come from?
I've always had a passion for people, and it was trying to figure out a productive way to pour into them, quite honestly. Mm-hmm. And I've been a mentor for 8 years. That was my first, venture in the whole nonprofit sector, really. And then reading was my outlet. It was my escape growing up. And so junior high, my cousin used to call me Mary Higgins Clark because I'd always have a book and it was a mystery. But, when I actually was at 2022, I had burnt out for my job. I'd had the title, senior director, blah, 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 and I had the money and it didn't bring me joy.
Yeah.
But in the midst of that, that time off, I really fell in love with reading and I had a stack of books as high. I didn't have to leave. I didn't have to spend money to go somewhere. They're right there in a book. And so I'm passionate about it. And if you can read, you can do anything. Exactly. I mean, that's that. I mean,
that's exactly that's right.
That is truly, truly it.
How do we? Because we're talking about values, and mm-hmm. every parent values education. Every parent wants their child to be more intelligent, mm-hmm. to be more successful, yep. to do then things they that they dreamt of doing and not able to do.
Mm-hmm. Remember, yeah, that awakening I was talking
exactly.
about.
Right.
Yeah.
Becoming a parent. When I had Easton, first child, that's when the stuff that used to slide off my back, I was like, I want better for him. Mm. Yeah. I want better for Easton. I want better for Ava. My mom will always raise us to have a voice, utilize it, how to advocate for ourselves. And you have to be able to read to do that.
So what message do you have for parents who are struggling? I mean, how do we get, and we're sitting around, we call this the kitchen table. Mm-hmm. What do parents need to really grasp onto in terms of understanding the essence of literacy for their kids and the next generation?
I would say reflect on the things that were hard for you growing up. Mm-hmm. What made them difficult? Have some introspection first. And, you know, if you say you're a dyslexic or you reading just wasn't your jam, it wasn't your strong point, right? Yeah. Think about how important and imperative it would have been if somebody would have taken the time to just say, hey, I know you're uncomfortable, but you can do it.
Yeah.
You know, that's a big part of parenting. And then if you don't have the means to do it, ask somebody that you're comfortable with, right?
Yeah.
And, I mean, we did Right to Read. We brought Right to Read, that the streaming. We streamed that at the Ross. And it shows across the nation, like, five different families and their different journeys with reading. Mm. And it takes a community. It takes a village. And if you don't have one, then, you know, it's find it.
Yeah.
And, like, my people, I'm sorry, earmuffs to everybody that might be blood related, but my people are my friends.
Yeah, yeah.
They will go the extra mile, not because they have to, because they're blood, because they want to.
Yeah.
Right.
And so, you know, it's, I'm really, I really key in on who I have my kids around,
who I spend
my time with, to make sure that they're promoting the things that you need to succeed. Right.
Can I add and interject? So I think there's something maybe that's important for people to recognize, and I hear it a little bit, and I want to really emphasize and try to really hone in on some of this stuff, because when people are born and raised in or are living in a high stress environment, our body does act biochemically. Right. And so if you have a woman who has a high stress pregnancy, that has a lot of repercussions on the baby.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things I heard you say was potentially reading to help relieve stress,
yes.
to bring cortisol mm-hmm. levels mm-hmm. down, to bring yes. adrenaline, all those things that can be toxic to a baby. But then you also have potentially adverse childhood experiences. Mm-hmm. Poverty is one of them. Mm-hmm. You know, and I'm just saying, just for the purposes of education on your hypothalamus, your pituitary, and your amygdala, yeah. when you're yeah. living in those high stress environments, you don't have the stress tolerance to read mm-hmm. or to read to your children, because maybe you're trying to put food on the table, maybe you're trying to avoid a domestic violence situation, trying to pay your rent, trying yep. to do yep. whatever, party, yep. whatever you're doing,
right.
because partying is a side effect of having adverse childhood.
Right.
You know, so to add to from my perspective, just from a psychological perspective, if de-stressing, doing what you can in the areas of health, meaning eating, even if it's an orange, just eat an orange. If you can, if that's all you can get, eat yeah. that. Drink a glass of water.
Yeah.
Exercise, getting out, you know, 2-3 times a day in nature.
Walking. Yes.
Being mindful. Being mindful is free. It sucks sometimes, but being able to sit down and then exercise, diet, mindfulness.
Can we tie
and sleep?
Yeah.
Can we tie the mindfulness spirituality into the mindfulness? Because I think for a lot of communities,
but reading is a mindful activity.
Oh, absolutely.
And so if you're reading to your child, pre-born even, or into, you're getting out of the stress. You're getting out of the head. You're not thinking of the stressful thoughts. So you're being mindful and intentional about the relationship.
Right.
And I think that that's the reveal that you're talking about. Uh-huh. Is you're like, wow, this is something that actually is healthy for my body even.
In a program we have. Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I know that you guys promote the 0 to 5.
Right.
But I would even change that and go to expecting mothers.
Yes.
So they can start reading with them.
Yes, absolutely.
In their pregnancy.
Well, and to piggyback, it's a beautiful segue to what I was going to say, is we have a program called Book Bridge.
Okay.
And that is for the caretaker and the parent. And awesome. How they can, we can either teach them how to relate to their kids, how, like I said, if that's not your comfort zone, we can show you tools and tips to make you both comfortable so that you can relate together. And another thing we have too are literacy nights. We work within the schools with English as a learned language. Mm-hmm. It's not that these parents don't want to connect. Some don't know, they don't know English.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And so how can they still be a part of their educational journey and their literacy journey, more importantly, because that's a big form of connection.
Well, you have
it in their home language.
And I don't want to let dads off the hook either, because dads need to be right in there.
Absolutely.
So this is not just a woman's issue. This is a family.
Absolutely.
So wherever your relationship with your children is as a father, reading is incredibly important for many different reasons.
I mean, literally, on Wednesday, I'm speaking to Bryan High School, and it's a class of parents, teenage parents, that have made the choice to be a parent. And they're like, first meeting, I was like, what do you guys like to read? They're like, I don't like to read, but I want better for my kids.
Right.
Mm. And they're 13, 14, 15, 16, like younger, but they still get it.
Yeah.
Reading is everything.
Of course. Mm-hmm. And I think for a lot of the young folks out there, sometimes you just have to do what you don't want to do.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the real struggles of life just in general.
Exactly.
Is making yourself do things that you don't want to do or don't like to do or don't feel comfortable doing or whatever.
Absolutely. So what are the long-term, short-term goals as you're positioned right now?
Short-term is definitely sustainability, like I talked about before, being able to do the programs that we have in place well, being able to have, funding for not just your, 1 year, but asking for funders for 3 to 5 year, security.
Yeah,
because absolutely. The last thing we need to do is worry about, like, well, how are we going to get this done? Yeah. You lose the mission trying to find the money, right?
Absolutely.
And so really wanting to have the funders have the right buy-in, mm-hmm. they're in alignment. We have a DEI statement that, hey, this is how we operate, and if you don't like it, then you don't have to participate.
Sure.
And that's important because it remains true to inclusivity and the vision and the mission and our culture as an entity.
Yeah.
So
I'm just thinking about, my mom ran a nonprofit called It Takes a Village, and she was a hawk when it came to going after corporations to sponsor certain programs or to invest or to provide brand new shoes. Like Burlington Coat Factory was really huge with her organization. Can you kind of like describe what is necessarily what you like to see happen in terms of corporate sponsorship and participation engagement?
Well, again, we have to make sure that their philanthropical goals, are something that we provide, right? So, there's some places that they want to have volunteer hours, right? So we have different events that they can volunteer for. First State Bank is one of our longtime sponsors, mm-hmm. and they help us build the Empowering Packs, right? They do donate, mm-hmm. but they donate their time as well, right? Shields is another sponsor we just had, and we didn't even have to seek them out. They sought us out. They have a passion for literacy. And awesome. so it's a two-way street, right? And you have to be a hawk, but you also have to be open.
Absolutely.
And the thing what I love about us that I take pride in is most of these funders that we have or sponsorships are very organic. And yes, we have to be intentional with partnering with the right people and getting the right sponsorships, but it's really letting the work speak for itself.
Let's talk about some of the barriers. Mm. What are some of the barriers that you've experienced in facing bringing literacy education to the school systems?
Well, for one, you have to make sure that the book is approved.
Okay.
Right. So, there's the book bans are everywhere, right? So what I love about our partnership under this Read Nebraska grant is, we give the list, but sometimes, they don't take the time to look at the actual graphics. They're looking at, they're looking at the titles,
Yeah. Right.
And so we are not sneaking it in, but we're intentionally bringing inclusivity into the schools.
Oh, mm-hmm. Great.
So the barrier would be, if we have any, would be making sure that we're not trying to step on the teacher's toes, mm-hmm. as far as what the curriculum is. And so we have a former teacher that's on our board, and she speaks a language, and it's to make sure that it's still impactful and we're being respectful, right?
Right.
A barrier that I face sometimes are people who are like, what's your title? And then just can't quite grasp it, and then you fix their face, and some of the deliveries in these rural areas. I'm like, I'm here with Link to Literacy, and it's like, but but that's okay. I mean, I'm willing to be uncomfortable to get the kids the books. You know, and then just I'm saying, like, with LPS in general, right? Okay. There's a there's someone, I don't remember her name, but she has to go through the complete list of books to make sure that they're approved.
So with data, you said there was a difficulty in getting data, like you can't get children's grades. Are they able to... There's got to be an answer to that.
Well,
I don't understand why it's they the parents, can't tell right? you.
The parents, I mean, the parents can get the grades.
The parents can. Right. It's just a matter of, okay, so the barrier in getting the data is parent participation.
Right.
Okay. And their willingness to share that kind of stuff, right? Even when it comes down to photographing different events, we have to have permissions of the kid. You know what I mean? Like, so it's what's nice about Dolly Parton Imagination Library is that you can see, like, the percentage of how many kids have signed up, right? So you already know whether we talk to the parent or not that they have more books in their home than they had from the beginning.
Right.
When it comes down to, like, Empower Me packs, the data is, can we track these kids? Really? Yeah. I mean, we don't, you know? So it's hard. We're trying to, and that's why the BookBridge program is so important, because it's with the care, it's specifically for the parent and the caretaker. So then when they sign up for this, they're going to be willing to share their journey.
Their journey, okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because that data is it's not an end all be all, but it would be really good to, like, have that data out there.
Through a survey.
Yeah, and you talk about, you know, how do we get sponsorships and funding? There's some people that love the emotional piece, but some just want to see the numbers.
Yeah.
And, like, we could tell you how many books we provided within the year, and that helps tremendously.
Sure.
Right. But, like, how you measure the impact, it gets a little tricky. Well,
but I do think that it is impactful just inherently, you know, because we got to be careful with quantitative and qualitative data. So what I'm suggesting is qualitative data. But if your numbers are going up in participation and those children are actively engaging and getting those books and they're staying involved, or that, you know, like a study year one, you have 10 participants, and then year five, you have 50. Mm-hmm. You see, just even having books in the home based on the research is there's data there's a cause. I mean, there's, you know, a correlation that more books, more accessibility, more, you know, of a reading level, higher reading level.
Well, and two, not to jinx us, but you talk about, like, our newsletter, our stats, our open rate is 66% consistently. Wow. And that means people are engaged. They want to know, and that shares what events we have, and we, you know, thank our partners and all the things. Yeah. And just, it's a real good glimpse of, I mean, we're, what I love about LTEL, Link to Literacy, we're authentic.
Yeah.
Mean, we pride ourselves in meeting people where they're at, and I think that's why, you know, it's, the programs are taking off. And, you know, you asked for future goals. We want to make this replicable in different states.
Yeah, and that's...
Absolutely.
I know before we get ready to wrap this up, so I just wanted to coin a phrase with you for our listeners as being the literacy queen. And what I mean by that is I want you to piggyback that, and as the queen of literacy,
because
we're not just in Lincoln, okay?
Right.
And you've said some very profound things, we're at the kitchen table, and they're scratching their heads like, well, what do I need to do? How can I do this? How can I get engaged? And what do parents, because at the end of the day, it starts with the parents. Mm-hmm. It starts with whoever the caregiver is for that young boy or girl. Mm-hmm. What is it that they must understand about the essence of literacy and change in terms of changing society?
That we will remain status quo if we don't have readers.
Boom.
Because if you can't read, I'm not to do a catchphrase, but you can't succeed. You really can't.
Exactly. You can't.
I mean, seriously, I used this example before. Like, you could be brilliant at math, but if you can't read the story problem, block.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right.
Exactly.
You know, if you might have a sense of direction, but if you can't read a map, block. You know, I mean, these are the things that, like, they're just it's, you're giving your child a fundamental right.
Yeah. Absolutely.
By allowing them to read.
You know, we moved here from California.
Why? No, I'm just kidding. Sorry.
Oh, the fires.
Well, now.
The fires.
We don't have any regrets now. It's a long story.
And a lot of the bookstores closed. Borders. Major bookstores. And when we moved here, they're thriving.
Yeah.
So West Coast bookstores, we talk about physical books.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you stay relevant in a digital age?
For me, I can only speak from experience. I have more satisfaction of turning that page. I'm a competitive person, and I can't do that when I'm scrolling. Sorry. Yeah. I like to say, oh, and I finished a book in this many hours, and this was the last page and the end.
Right.
But it's actually the, and I use this word a lot, but it's real, but making it a point to take your kids to a bookstore, take your kids to the library.
Yeah.
And I think if we look at it as an activity. Mm-hmm. Oh, we're going to go out and do something. We're going to the local bookstores. And that's why I think Lincoln's thriving. There's so many, the local love here.
Yeah.
That makes a difference, right? But yeah, it's just not forgetting from whence we came. Like so often we were always looking forward, right? Futuristic. But if you go back to the basics, books.
To the basics, exactly. So in terms of innovation, is it something that you guys in the future may look to, having digital books online for kids?
We can make that available. Yeah. Absolutely, because reading is reading.
Right.
Right? Yeah. But what we love about what you can't have in the digital age is the ownership piece. And with ownership comes pride. And then it's like, hey, this is mine. And I completed this, or I did this.
Yeah, got it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. But I do want to really quickly add that there is data that shows that the reading level of children who do have access to reading materials on digital media is less than actually having a book, because the type of books that they're choosing to read or materials that they're reading are not of linguistic quality. So putting sentences together, utilizing grammar, doing all those kinds of things.
Right.
So again, you know, reading, having that human contact, you know, that's why we don't let TVs raise our children, is because the physical, there's just an energy between parents and their children. So those things are really important that you kind of lose on, you know, and I'm not trying to discount it, because anything's better than, or something's better than nothing.
Right.
Of course.
And again, I made that analogy from West Coast to Nebraska.
Yeah. Right.
So
right.
You see, they're closed down in West Coast.
And more
so
digital.
Everything is digital. Yeah. I still have a library card. And I believe in a physical book in the hand is important. But I think in some point in our society, we've kind of lost that.
Mm-hmm. The magic of it.
Yeah. And I think we should really fight to keep that alive.
Well, and that's why, point. Yes, and when you, the thing that you can get within the pages of a book now, especially with inclusivity, you can see yourself.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, in any realm, and that's, it's so important, even with like the graphic novels that are out there for junior high. We haven't even talked about that. Like, it's okay if they like, if they like comic books, okay? Yeah. Or like, you
comic
know.
Comic books are pretty cool.
Yeah, absolutely. You meet people where they're at. Yeah, you meet wherever their instincts lie or their interests lie. Like, that's what you do. Like, I helped a high school senior last year. She had to write a paper on, you know, what's more important is, you have to do the you know, fiction, or does nonfiction count? Or what, you know, what is the baseline to get people excited about books? And it's really whatever excites
they want,
you.
Yeah. Yeah. The choice. Yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome.
You want to take us out?
Yeah. Are we there? Okay, I want to thank you for joining us in on this show, Tiffany Childress. Thank you for being here.
Thank you very much.
Lucy, too. Let people know where they can connect with your organization.
Well, you can find us on Volunteer Link, Volunteer LNK, if you want to volunteer. Again, linktoliteracy.org. You can follow us on social media, Facebook, Instagram. We're trying to maybe get into TikTok, but it's so uncomfortable for me. But anyways, it's coming. But yeah, any you know, social media is definitely a good way to follow us and our activities. And again, I love our board. I love, you know, the mission, and our vision is really to just try to make a difference. And that's why we do what we do. It's not for us. It's for the, you know, our youth.
Amazing.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you for being here. Follow us again on www.hiddenbattlesdmi.com. Like, share, and share this video with someone that can benefit from it. See you on the journey next time.
Take care.
Hidden Battles Destigmatizing Mental Illness documentary is taking the route of major film festivals for exposure and awards recognition, and here is the promo.
Somewhere in your neighborhood, families are suffering from severe mental illness.
They put me in here because I tried to kill myself, which is extremely fucked up because I tried to kill myself.
And I ended up running my car into the Capitol.
Loved ones looking for answers.
I didn't know what to do. I really did not know what to do because I felt very alone at times. I felt like there really was no one that understood what I was going through.
And I remember the doctor telling me on the phone that lower your expectations. Lower your expectations. And that it wasn't going to be like you thought it was going to be.
I'm sorry, baby girl. I'm so sorry. Please forgive me.
Is the perception of mental illness fact or plain old stigma?
They didn't want their kids to be friends with me because they were afraid their kids would catch what I had.
Can someone that self-harms function on their own?
You need to take a look at the darkness and bring it into the light and understand that your behavior, your discrimination, your hate, your side comments, your jokes actually kill people.
Hidden Battles, destigmatizing mental illness.
Hidden Battles, destigmatizing mental illness.
Mental illness doesn't only affect the person diagnosed by it, affects everyone. If you have a loved one that has been diagnosed with a mental illness and are facing challenges, NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness, provides monthly confidential family support groups. You can gain support from peers who understand your experience as well as insight into challenges and successes of others because it can be overwhelming. For more information, go to www.hiddenbattlesdmi.com or call 402-200-0656. You don't have to do it alone.
Where passionate advocates of mental health converge to illuminate unseen struggles faced by millions. Join Jeremy, Terrell, and Lorraine as they delve into candid conversations about stigmas, cultural risk, values, intersectionality, and mental health. Hear from mental health professionals and those diagnosed with a mental illness. Together, they put on the table the things people think about but are afraid to talk about. Get ready to embark on an insightful journey.
Listen weekly on Spotify, YouTube, Apple Podcast, and subscribe, like, and please share with family and friends that can benefit. See you on the journey. Tune in next week when the advocates continue their conversation. Hear personal experiences, ideas, and subjective opinions, thought-provoking, heated conversations that just may challenge your beliefs, prejudices, and perspectives, helping you to align values or repurpose your life. Hidden Battle Destigmatizing Podcast space can make you question, stretch, grow, and develop to become the best version of yourself.